This is a CBC podcast.
To the left, stop to the right, wiggle that dino tail tonight. Turn all around, you can feel all right at
ah! Hey, I'm Claire Bonnieman, and this is Edmonton, a local podcast from CBC News. The Junos are this weekend in Halifax, and it has me thinking a lot about last year when they took over our city. And there were so many events, but one has really stuck with me. The Junior Junos.
I said, are we ready to party? There we go.
They were held in the basement of the Milner in the Matart Theater, and it was a who's who of Canadian children's musicians. Beppe, Garth Prince, Splashin' Boots, all these artists that make kids go wild. And oh my God, they did.
Turn it all around if you feel all right and...
I'm a grown woman, and even I got out of my seat. It was so contagious to watch kids sing and dance to their favorite songs, or even songs they'd never heard before. Some of these kids could barely make a sentence, much less remember lyrics, but did that stop them? Hell no. Edmonton has a really long history of kids' entertainment, of successful TV shows, books, and music. CFRN, now CTV, had a long-running kids' show called Popcorn Playhouse. It aired for more than 4,000 episodes and featured 140,000 kids from across Alberta over the years. More recently, the International Children's Festival of the Arts in St. Albert has been running for more than four decades. And of course, our kids' fringe is massive too. There's a lot of magic in creating stuff that kids go nuts for. So I reached out to two Edmontonians who do just that. Beppe is a two-time Juno nominee for Children's Album of the Year. You heard her song Dynamite live from the Junior Junos. And Marty Chan is an award-winning children's book author and playwright. They join me to talk about the work that goes into making that magic for kids today and why they love to do it here. Hello, Beppe and Marty. Welcome.
Hello.
Hello.
I want to start with some memories, maybe, looking back. Do you have any memories of maybe favorite kids stuff from when you were young?
Oh, yeah. Like, my whole childhood was filled with crazy stuff. Like, people coming to the school and, like, I think my first memory of, like, children's content was Jacques Chauvin. And do you guys know Jacques Chauvin?
Can you hum a little bit or something?
He had, like, Les Blues Hamburger. I was starstruck. I thought he was the coolest. Long mullet, 80s rock and roll, like just the coolest guy. And I wanted to be a rock star. I think that was the moment I knew I needed to be as cool as Jacques Chauvin.
There's a serious lack of mullets in kids' entertainers these days, I will say.
It's of an era. I remember a children's author, Martin Godfrey, who also had long hair. It's quite striking. Then I realized that kids' authors don't make enough money to actually afford haircuts. And I was like, oh.
It all comes together. Well, I was going to say, Marty, you go to schools. You're one of these traveling folks doing performances and talking to kids all the time. So no mullet for you, though.
No mullet. Just a hat to hide my bald spot.
I bet you they think your hat's super cool, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I did in-person presentations, I realized that a lot of the kids, they sit on the gym floor.
Yeah.
And so they're looking at my feet. And what I did was I found a pair of, I call them my Spider-Man runners, but they were like a pair of runners I got from a discount store in Las Vegas.
Do they light up?
No, they don't light up, but they look just like a Spider-Man pair of shoes. And every time I would be in a gym, all those kids would be just staring at my shoes. I was like, all right, I've got their attention for now. I bought 2 minutes of their attention.
That's what they'll remember, too.
Yeah.
They won't remember any awesome
I don't know
things.
His name, but he had these Spider-Man shoes.
Yeah. What do you remember from when you were growing up, Marty?
I think my favorite memory in terms of kids' stuff is being invited by Jay Enright, who was my best friend back in Morinville. He invited me to be part of his birthday party on Popcorn Playhouse.
It's time for Popcorn Playhouse, a half hour of fun and prizes. with a variety of different games and contests for our studio guests and everyone at home. Now, here is your host, Ed Kay.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Popcorn Playhouse, and a special welcome to all the boys and girls who've joined us today. How are you?
But we got to sit in the gallery, and Klondike Eric came up and interviewed me. And at the time, they had all these drawings that were sent in by kids, and he asked me which drawing was my favorite. I remember turning to this tiny little drawing of Snoopy that nobody, the camera couldn't see, right? Because all the kids' bodies were blocking it. And I pointed at this tiny little picture and I said, this one, I like this one a lot. And the next day at school, the kids were like, I saw you on Popcorn Playhouse. And that was a really cool moment to be on a kid's show.
As someone who didn't grow up in Edmonton, it's amazing the lore that I've continued to hear from Popcorn Playhouse.
But no, it's iconic for a certain generation.
Yeah,
right?
Famous. You were famous. Yeah.
Now you're famous before you were famous.
Yeah. You didn't become the new Klondike Eric, but when was it in your life that you were like, oh, I know I want to make kid stuff. I know I want to make content and books for kids.
I think it was about 15, 20 years. Sorry, the pandemic sort of like puts a blip in my time.
It adds an extra decade to everybody's timelines.
Yeah,
now.
So if we add four, then it's probably about 20 years. I started writing books for kids. Before that, I was working in theater and television, writing plays for adults, which I have a much different persona for theater than I do for kids' books. But I started writing these little books. They're mystery books, the Marty Chan mystery series. And originally they were just sort of a slice of life of what my exaggerated childhood would have been like if I was actually cool. but these kids' books came out, and I, at the time I just wrote these books to entertain myself. I was like, I like mystery. I like funny things. I'll just put them in. And it caught with the kids.
Beppe, when did becoming a musician for children come into your life?
I think that this is always an interesting question because a lot of children's musicians, their answer is, I had kids. So I stopped making grown-up music and I started making kid music. But I've always just made kid music. So that's always been my thing. But I've been teaching kids for so long. So for me, the creation of music specifically for kids started when I taught preschool music classes. So I saw there was a need for specific songs that helped me to teach certain foundational elements of music. And I wanted those songs to be specifically created in a way that could be both educational, but also like super bopping. So I just started writing my own songs. So, and I haven't stopped. I know we're releasing our sixth full-length album on April 12th.
Congratulations.
Oh, wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
As someone who has written books and plays for, you know, adult audiences versus kids audiences, how do you get into that brain space and that headspace to create something that will engage kids in?
I don't try to separate like the idea of writing for kids versus writing for adults. Mm-hmm. I just want to tell a good story. And then once I've written the story, then I figure out, okay, so how is this inappropriate for kids? which I learned the lesson on, I think, the first book, The Mystery of the Frozen Brains. That was my first kid's book. So I was writing still thinking about, you know, an adult audience. And I think I used the word ass. As a reference, as an insult from one kid to the other. And I was smart enough to do a test read for a group of third graders. And I was reading that particular passage thinking, oh, this will be fun. And the gasp that went through the crowd when I used the word ass, I was like, oh, dear. Okay. And I just started scratching that out on my manuscript. So when I write my stories, I think about story first and then audience second.
Yeah. Edmonton has kind of this history when we think about Popcorn Playhouse, but even just about all the different creators and the kinds of entertainment and books and music for kids that come out of this place. Why do you think that is? Why is there so much of this energy coming from here?
That's a great question. I think we just have this culture that nurtures that kind of creativity. I know that as an artist working in Edmonton, I get a ton of support from both the Edmonton Arts Council and then also provincially. I think we get support, financial support too. But then there's also this other vibe that, like, you know, my shows are always packed and, you know, kids and families always want to come out and do these live events and have live music and interaction. So we are the festival city. We are the place where you go to create and you're just surrounded by this whole entire community that lifts you up and supports that. So I think that's huge, right? Just having that support both with the engagement side and then also with the financial side of things.
I agree with you. The whole idea of a festival city has created a real nurturing environment for people who are creative. Because of my background in theater, I think about the Fringe Festival and how in the summer, everybody goes out to see a play at some point, or they go hang out in the beer tent and pretend that they saw a play. But whatever they do, they're there to support whatever people put up on stage. And I started in theater, you know, some 40 years ago. And I remember how supportive the community was back then, and it still continues to be supportive now. And when you have that kind of supportive environment, you can't help but to, you know, try things that are creative, that are outside the box, that people haven't thought of, because you go, I have a safety net because I know that somebody in Edmonton is going to be like, that's a really cool idea. We should try that.
Yeah. Tell me more about that. I mean, how has being here changed the work that you produce?
For me, I think the isolation of being in a community where there's not as many distractions. I think if I lived near the mountains or the ocean, I might have more distractions. But when you're here, I'm not a winter person. I'm just going to put that up front. I'm not a winter person. So when you don't have a lot of distractions, you focus on your imagination and your creativity.
I think for me, it's been the opposite. I search the distractions. I search for the interactions and the engagement with little kids. So I run songwriting workshops. I'm usually at the Fringe every day doing something for the Fringe whenever it's coming to town. I'm out at the libraries. I'm looking for those ideas from the kids, because the kids have the best ideas. Like, you should write a song about farting unicorns. Yeah, I should.
Definitely. Yeah,
I should absolutely do that, right? So there's these really fun and kind of, I guess they're just these sweet, innocent ideas that come from the minds of the children. And so I do love to get that connection and like enjoy, you know, getting those ideas and then working with them to build the songs and build the content. And then, oh my goodness, what if one of your songs ends up on my album? Wow, how cool would that be? So we get to get excited together, and there's so many opportunities for that here. It's just really fun to kind of go down these journeys with kids in different contexts and different groups of kids and different sizes of groups. If you get a really small group, you can really kind of spend a little bit of time with that connection piece on a deeper level. And then if you get a larger group, it's just this community effect that happens, and they're all kind of engaging together, and they figure it out together how they want to engage with you. So yeah, Edmonton's been pretty spectacular for giving me tons of opportunities. I don't tour a lot outside of Alberta, to be perfectly honest. There's just so much to do right here.
There will often be audiences of adults in the room as well. And it is such a balance to strike and create a song that kids want to listen to, but adults are happy to put on in the car, or create a book that parents are happy to pick up over and over again and read to their kids and they can enjoy as well. Mm-hmm. How do you find and play with that balance in the work you do?
Oh, for me, I just write music for me. I just write music that I will enjoy, honestly. And I've gotten to a point now where, like, at first I did do that, but it was a struggle. I think there's little kids walking by.
There are little kids walking by.
I want to say
that
they're cheering
planned.
For me.
Yeah, that was absolutely planned.
They didn't know I was here.
they were running into the booth.
Yeah. Just hordes of fans
it's
everywhere.
It's Peppy.
And some bald guy.
Yeah. You're wearing your cool hat, Marty. You look spectacular.
Look at my shoes.
But yeah, I just write music for me. I think at the beginning of the journey, it was more like I tried really hard to please everybody else. Like, what would they want to hear? What do the kids want to hear? What the parents want to hear? And now I've just abandoned that. And now I just write music that I know that I will love to listen to over and over and over and over and over again. Because then at the end of the day, if nobody else loves it, I can just enjoy it. I made it for me. So the music for me is very much songs that you'd hear on the radio, but then we're talking about how everybody has a butt, or we're talking about, you know, your favorite flavor bubblegum, or whatever we're singing about, space tomatoes.
Was it the chicken wing?
I have a song called Chicky Wing.
Chicky Wing is a bop.
I love that one.
And it is a bop.
Chicky Wing is an absolute bop.
Yeah, it's super fun. Just the content has to be universally accessible. And I think that's something that I do simply from drawing on my own experiences as a human. I used to be a child. I have children. I'm a parent. I'm a creator. I'm an artist. You know, I know what I'm going to like from my perspective, and that seems to be a good combination.
Well, Martin. I love how you say that. Like the music or the songs that you write are the songs for you. And there's something to me about music that's universal, right? Like if you find the right beat or the right rhythm, it doesn't matter like how old you are, you're just going to get into that groove.
Yeah.
And that's what I love. Like with Chicky Wing, I was like, oh,
Marty does know who I am.
This is the Bevy fan.
I was like, Marty, I know who you are, but you don't know who I am. But that's okay. But now I know Marty knows who I am. It's okay. You're allowed to be a fan. You can be open about it.
And I have the sticker. I have the sticker to prove it. Sticker to prove. I'm holding a Bevy sticker right now. But that universality is what I aim for when I'm writing. I'm coming up with a story that captures experiences of childhood, right? Something that you would recognize even if you weren't a kid now.
We're seeing so many of the kids' shows and kids' music from our own lives come back in different ways now. I think TikTok, there's a huge resurgence of a show I grew up with called Nana Land.
Ooh, yummy blueberries in
here. And it's interesting. It's these adult audiences that are bringing it back and then maybe even showing their own kids. What do you think is so powerful about that nostalgia from the stuff that we had and loved when we were kids?
Oh, yeah, it's super powerful. For me, it's Ninja Turtles.
Oh, nice.
I was obsessed with the Ninja Turtles when I was a little girl. And so I had like a whole like suitcase where I had like all of the characters, like April O'Neil and Casey Jones and all of the Ninja Turtles and Shredder and you know, all of them. So then when the Ninja Turtles never went away, right?
No.
Like they just like keep evolving.
It was just a new movie. Like, yeah.
And Seth Rogen was working on that one. I just feel like it's so cool to be able to like have something that I loved when I was a kid that my kids love right now. And anytime that those things exist, maybe I celebrate that a little too much. And I'm just like, hey, let's go watch this movie together. But it's this intergenerational connection, and it's a way for us to relate with the kids in our lives, and it's a pathway for the kids to connect with the adults in their lives, because I don't know if you've noticed, but my childhood was vastly different. My kids are living a life I wouldn't have even been able to envision the life that my kids have, or even like make it up, right? Like it's the super sci-fi version of reality that like I would have never understood as a kid. So when we can find commonalities, I really do lean on those. And I do celebrate those through my music too, because yeah, they're so fun to kind of draw on and celebrate and connect with. So I say Ninja Turtles, but there's a million, like Care Bears and My Little Pony Never Went Away.
Oh, yeah.
And like all those little things from when I was a really little kid.
Yeah,
so I love it when things come back again with new life, and then I can see them both through my little girl eyes and then through also my children's eyes. Yeah. It's really cool.
Marty, do you have a Ninja Turtles equivalent?
Do I have a Ninja Turtles equivalent? Do you remember He-Man?
Oh, yeah. He-Man is still around.
Yeah, it came back. Yeah. There's a Netflix special now with that. But in terms of nostalgia, I think a lot of times when you're young, those first formative experiences you have are the ones that sort of cut the deepest groove into your psyche, because they're the first experience. And sort of the analogy I use is if you go to a social setting and you ask anybody to name their worst teacher or their favorite teacher, somebody's going to come up with a name fairly quickly, because that was their first experience with either a teacher that empowered them or a teacher that, you know, tortured them. And in the same way with kids' content or kids' entertainment, like that first time that you see something that's amazing for you, it's going to be that first time. There's no other first time that you're going to be like, wow, you know, there's The Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, or wow, there's Mr. Dress-Up, right? That's the first time, and so it sticks with you. And I remember the Mr. Dress-Up documentary. After he had retired, he did a college circuit sort of bar tour where he'd just go into a bar and he'd do a Q&A with anybody who remembered Mr. Dress-Up. And
there
were like 20-year-olds who would go in and they'd ask him all these questions about what he did on the show. And I thought, oh, that says a lot about that whole nostalgia thing and how it has a connection. When you've got, you know, kids who could do anything else, but they want to spend one night in a bar with their childhood icon, Mr. Dress-Up, just to talk about the show and what he did, right?
That's how impactful he was. Yeah. Or the Goosebumps books.
Oh, R.L. Stine.
Those, like, my kids read those now, right? And I was obsessed with those too when I was looking. Like, just those little things that come up, because they do. They make these deep impacts on us as human beings. And then being able to share that is pretty crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's as an adult, you try to reach back in time to go, oh, this is a time when the world was possible.
When I was happy. Yeah.
I look forward to the day when we can all do the Chicky Wing in a bar together.
Yeah. Oh, I should do a bar hop. Beppy bar hop.
The Beppy bar hop. I'm in. If that is the main thing to come out of this conversation, my job here is done.
This is Edmonton is a local podcast from CBC News. Our senior producer is Leslie Goldstone, and our technician this week is Corey Haberstock. I'm Claire Bonnieman. Thank you so much for listening. This is Edmonton is recorded on Treaty 6 territory, the traditional gathering place of the Cree, Soto, Blackfoot, Métis, Dene, and Nakota Sioux. We are part of a hyperlocal podcast family, so if you know someone else who wants to know what's up in Edmonton, share the show, or they can tune into our sister shows in Calgary, who just did a great episode on coyotes, or Vancouver Island, who had an awesome one on rewilding spaces, even as far as Montreal and PEI. And you can find all of us, rate us, and review us wherever you get your podcasts.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.